Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So, stay tuned for tonight's special report on the global financial crisis right after this. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. This surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity, from bank deposits to medical visits, has produced greater efficiency and security, all right. But it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Now, our federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American. That's according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. Now, closer to home, our state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. And a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state, New York, and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems. Those systems contained 10,799 categories of information about New York residents. And every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Now, all of this information about you is being gained from 63 sources. And this information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner. And it's done for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how your government, your bank, your insurance company, business and industry is obtaining all of this information about you? What are their sources? How is it being stored? How is it retrieved? What do they want it for anyway? Well, knowing how this information is being gathered and what information is being stored and what information you want to keep personal and private actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, if you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, then call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. And while you're at it, why don't you ask for that free general law CD package? And let me tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and private as you want to be. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. And the source is georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And then click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. georgegordon.org, and then go to the archives page. Well, we're talking about the global financial crisis. And I said in the last program, I said, now, let's take a look at the realities that are going on around us. So I pointed out to you that what's going on around us is more of the same, only it's worse and getting worser. That's what Dorothy said. It's worse and getting worser. And the solution to the problem is not more spending, although our government tells us we're going to spend ourselves to riches. We have dug ourselves a hole and buried ourselves, and now we're digging it deeper. And there's going to be an outcome that comes from that. And I want to come through this just, you know, with as little pain, suffering, and agony as I can. So I thought I would share with you and put a few numbers together for you. And I pulled out J. Richard Nimella. Get that number down. J. Richard Nimella. And that's spelled N-I-E-M-E-L-A. And he's got an internet connection here. He's got an email. And I pulled this off the email. Now, he's taking this off of the internet, and he's got probably 40 sources here. And he has sourced each one of these 40 bizarre statistics. I gave you 7 the last program. J. Richard Nymelin. Now, if you'll write this down, it's RICNIEMELA. That stands for Richard Nymelin at earthlink.net. It's all one word, RICNIEMELA at earthlink.net. Now, he posted this Saturday, August the 14th, 2010. So it's about 3 months old. Saturday, August 14th, 2010. And it's titled 40 Bizarre Statistics. And then he's got the sources for all of this information. It's kind of encoded here in each one of these statements. So you got to read between the lines here so you can get the sense of it. But last time I stopped on number 7. This is what American workers now must compete against. In China, a garment worker is making approximately 86 cents an hour. In Cambodia, that same garment worker is making 22 cents an hour. Now, this is probably good for American business because these companies that were in North and South Carolina employing American workers in the 1960s and 70s, they moved everything overseas. And now they ship all of that back into the United States duty-free, make their profits off of it, selling it to us. We love it because we're buying shirts for $5 a shirt instead of $25. When I was a kid, I used to buy those wool shirts, you know, Pendleton shirts. Well, today, a Pendleton shirt in the Pendleton store over in Branson's $100. In those days, it was $16. Now, my wife went into, I think it was J.C. Penney or Sears, one or the other, in Battlefield Mall some time back, and she found a stack of shirts that would fit me. I think it was 15 or 20 of them. All made in India for $5 a shirt. Now, they weren't Pendleton wool shirts. They were cotton shirts. But my God, $5 a shirt? Hell, I never paid $5 for a shirt when, you know, back in the 60s, it cost you $6, $7 a shirt. Now, here we are, you know, 30 years later with inflation running rampant. And the shirts are selling for less now than they were back, you know, when I was making $3 an hour. And I just wanted to point out that these cheap imports coming into the United States undermine our economy and export our jobs, and that's what's happened. And remember the guy Ross Perot? I don't hear anything from him. I don't think he's died, but Ross Perot, he was a billionaire, and he was running for president in 1992. He said this outsourcing and this exporting of our jobs overseas and free trade is the kiss of death. And he was right. And it was the kiss of death, and now we are in a death spiral. And here's the bad part. You know, it used to be they could come to us and say, well, if we don't change our ways, then our economy is going to collapse. Well, now it doesn't make any difference whether you change your ways or not. Your economy is going to collapse. Got that? This thing is like an airplane that's lost a wing. Just one wing. Was ripped off in heavy turbulence. Now, we're still at 30,000 feet, but the ultimate end of this airplane trip is going to be 200 Gs in about 10 minutes when this airplane hits the ground. Is there anything that we can do now to lessen the impact when we hit the bottom? And the answer is no. There isn't anything that's going to change what's in the offing right now. Now, if you could get a parachute on and get off this airplane, that'd be real great. It's not very likely that you're going to do that, but I thought anyway I'd tell you, here's what's coming, you know, so get the Vaseline out. Now listen to this, number 8. According to a poll taken in 2009, 61% of Americans always or usually live paycheck to paycheck. That was up significantly from 49% in 2008 and 43% in 2007. So this thing of living paycheck to paycheck has been going on as long as I've been alive. But now instead of 40% of us in 2007 living paycheck to paycheck, it's up to 60% now. All right, well, get ready because it's going to be more as time progresses along. Because the economy is deteriorating, it's not getting better and better. Number 9. According to a recent poll conducted by Bloomberg, 71% of Americans say that it still feels like the economy is in a recession. So 71% of you, when you're asked, are saying, gosh, I can't see any difference between what we saw a year or two ago, although the government the other day said the recession ended in June of 2009. Isn't that special? The recession has ended in June of 2009. You can't tell the difference, and I can't tell the difference. And what I'm looking at is all of the closed stores and businesses in the strip malls. That's what I'm looking at. I'm watching Branson. We were driving down the strip the other day in Branson. My wife counted 51 closed businesses. 51. And that was in September at the peak of the season. Peak of the season, September. 51 closed businesses on the strip. And one of them is the biggest. The biggest theater over there is closed. It's called the Grand Palace. Closed. And the shows over there are opting for the smaller theaters. They're all downsizing. All downsizing. Went over to Silver Dollar City. And Silver Dollar City, the crowd over there, it was in October. October. First week of October. The crowd over there was about one half normal. I talked to one vendor over there that said he's just hanging on by his fingernails. Since the crowds, the number of people going to Silver Dollar City, it's an amusement park, so it is like Six Flags, since the number has dropped by half, the vendors over there, the people, you know, that make all of those thingies that you buy over there, are just barely able to pay the rent and make ends meet. Now get this, many of the vendors were closed. I didn't count how many were closed, but I can tell you that six or eight of them were closed the day I was over there. Now, there's probably 100 vendors in Silver Dollar City, and, you know, 6, 8, or 10 of them being closed, maybe at 6, 8, 10%. Silver Dollar City in September and October should be booming. There should be crowds and lines everywhere. Those people over there should be making money hand over fist. You know, in just normal times. Now, we're in recession times. The number of people that have spare cash to spend on riding on rides and buying trash and taking it home, you know, all the stuff that you don't need, can't use, and shouldn't have, that's what we spend our money on, remember? All right, now the people that are making all that stuff that you don't need, can't use, and shouldn't have are barely hanging on. Number 10, banks repossessed 269,962 U.S. homes during the second quarter of 2010, which is a new all-time record. Then in the third quarter, they topped that record. Every quarter, they're repossessing more houses. It's not getting better, boys and girls. It's getting worse. Furthermore, the houses that they're selling, you know, they're repossessing and selling, they're holding a big inventory off the market. This is called the shadow inventory. That's because if they put all the houses on the market, prices would just collapse. So they're putting houses on the market, the better ones, and they're holding back their inventory so they can get the highest prices they can get in a down market that's going lower. And the prices on houses are going lower. You know, from their peak, I saw a number the other day, $178,000 is the median average price for a house in the United States, down from $256,000, you know, at the peak. And it's going lower. And they're expecting, and reading the underground papers over here, we're expecting another 40% lower prices on houses. Before this thing bottoms out, about 2012, 13, 14, I don't know if it's going to be two, three, four more years. You can expect, whatever your house is worth today, 40% less for your house over the next 3 years. That's when you get ready to sell it. And that's assuming that you can sell it. And houses on the market now take 9 months to sell. That's the average length of time. You list it today, on average, you'll sell it in 9 months. Isn't that special? Number 11, banks repossessed an average of 4,000 South Florida properties a month in the first half of 2010. That's up 83%. So in South Florida, you guys down there, that's almost double what it was. Now, when your foreclosures double in a year, isn't that bad and getting worse? All right, now that's in South Florida. Now, each one of these bizarre statistics has a website that he's gone to. For instance, that one comes from www.bizjournals.com, South Florida Stories. Number 10, banks repossessed 269,000 houses. Well, that came from www.reuters.com with an article and a number. Each one of these is documented, so I just wanted to point that out to you that, you know, I'm not just dreaming this up and spouting off the top of my head. You know, it's Reuters, and it's this website, and it's Nymela, and these guys are collecting the statistics. Now, I'm going to give you some more here. We'll take a look at the Privateer, the International Forecaster, and a series of programs, and these guys all have reports to be made, too. And the Cheerleader, you know, our cheerleader on CBS, Katie. Hey, listen, that girl isn't telling us everything that's going on. I feel a lot better when I listen to Katie Couric in the news than I do when I read The Privateer or Nymela. I really feel a lot better. But, hey, listen, that girl's not telling us what the hell's going on out here. And I would suggest to you that you wake up and smell the coffee. Here's number 12. According to Realty Track, a total of 1.65 million U.S. properties received foreclosure filings during the first half of 2010. My God, 1.65 million of those houses. That's 1.6 million. 1,650,000 houses received a foreclosure filing in the first half of 2010. You know, old Joe Stalin made an observation. He said, when one person dies, it's a tragedy. When a million people die, it's a statistic. But, you know, every one of those 1.65 million people are people just like you and just like me. How would you like it if you got a foreclosure notice on your house? I know how I would feel. Now, fortunately, I'm not going to get a foreclosure notice on my house. That doesn't make me, you know, all that bulletproof. But I just wanted to point out, I'm bulletproof when it comes to foreclosure because I don't have a mortgage. Now, about one third of Americans don't have a mortgage. Two thirds of Americans do. Every one of you with a mortgage on your house, you know, you're naked. You're walking around the streets naked. The only difference between you and the neighbor over here is that you still got your job, but unemployment's going up. And when it hits 62%, that's the bad news. Good news is 38% of people will still have jobs and will still be making their mortgage payments. But 62% won't. So you might want to be thinking about that and your mortgage and what are you going to do when you lose your job. Well, you're not going to make your payments. That's where all the people are out here now that are getting the foreclosure notices. If they had a job, they'd be making money. If they're making money, they'd be making their mortgage payments, wouldn't they? All right, so let's all wake up and smell the coffee here. Number 13, the Mortgage Bankers Association recently announced that demand for loans to purchase U.S. homes has sunk to a 13-year low. So going back 13 years, that's the level. And go back 13 years, that's 1997. We are now making loans at the 1997 level. So the housing market has regressed to the 1997 level. Population goes up. You know, we need 100,000 jobs every month, 1,200,000 jobs a year, just to take care of the high school graduates and college graduates that are coming out of school every year. We're not even producing enough jobs to take care of the increased population, much less the 10.5 million jobs that have been lost over the last 3 years. You know, talk about bad news now. Only, number 14, only the top 5% of U.S. households have earned enough additional income to match the rise in housing costs since 1975. 95% of households since 1975 have been going in the hole. They have not earned enough additional income to match the rise in housing costs. That's why housing is expensive, and that's why you can't afford it. You can't make enough money to pay the mortgage. I mean, here you got all these houses out here being foreclosed on. You got millions of people that like to buy them, can't afford them. They don't have a job. You know, unemployed people aren't buying houses. Unemployed people are not buying houses. And your unemployment rate's 28%. Okay, so you got 28% that aren't buying houses. You know, that impacts upon all of us. People that aren't buying houses aren't buying cars. People that aren't buying cars, you know. You people that are working in the auto industry and people aren't buying your cars, then you're not buying houses and you're not buying cars either. Everybody has to be working. Everybody has to be doing something, making money in order to buy, in order for me to sell, in order for you. You know, I sell schools. If you're not working, you're not buying schools. So it impacts upon me just like it impacts upon everybody else. Now, it impacts upon some people harder than others, because if you're living from hand to mouth, paycheck to paycheck, you know, that's where tough sledding comes. Now, for the rest of us that aren't living hand to mouth yet, get ready, because we will be shortly. It's coming to a city near you shortly. Now, here's number 15. 1.4 million Americans filed for personal bankruptcy in 2009. That was a 32% rise from 2008, and more and more average Americans resorting to bankruptcy with even tougher rules to file. That's a 32% increase over 2008. So 32% more of us, that's about a third more of us, are filing for bankruptcy now in 2009 than we did in 2008. I don't have a number for 2009 over 2010 over 2009. We haven't got to the end of the year yet. But my guess would be, based upon all of the trends that we see, that we're going to see an increase over 2009 when we get the 2010 number, which will come out in the next couple of months. Number 16. Back in 1950, each retiree's Social Security benefit was paid for by 16 workers. Today, each retiree's Social Security benefit is paid for by 3.3 workers. By 2025, it's projected that the silent entitlements monster Social Security, Medicare, and interest on the debt will gobble up every single tax dollar by 2020, and there will be two workers for each retiree. Now, this is 2010, and in 2020, now we're just talking 10 years down the road. Do you think that's sustainable, boys and girls? Do you think you're going to be drawing your Social Security check? And by 2032, the number will be down to 1-to-1. And then past 2032, there will be two people drawing on Social Security for every one person working. And then at some point in time, it'll be four people drawing Social Security for every one person paying in. How long do you think this is going to go on, huh? Now, you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist now to start putting these numbers together. I'm up here to number 15 or 16. You know, these numbers of and by themselves spell disaster, and there's 40 of them. 40 of them. And this is why I thought, my God, you know, the news media isn't out of touch with reality. They know exactly what's going on. They're not reporting it to you. They're not leveling with you. They're not telling you what the hell's going on here. Number 17, according to a new poll, 6 of 10 non-retirees believe that Social Security won't be able to pay them benefits when they stop working. So now 60% of you people out there believe that Social Security is not going to be able to pay you those benefits. That's number 17. Well, number 16 tells it all. You're exactly right, 60%. Here's the tragedy. 40% of you people out there believe that everything's all right and Social Security will be there and paying you your benefits. Boy, have you people got your heads up your hind ends. That's why some years back, my wife and I, we got thinking about this. Do we want to draw Social Security? Well, I think Social Security is the mark of the beast. So for that reason alone, I opted not to draw it. But we thought about retirement. You know, well, should we retire? I mean, you know, we're 65, and that's what everybody retires. And so when we got to be 65, we said, no, we're not going to retire. What we'll do is we'll get up an hour earlier and go to bed an hour later, and we will work harder over the next 5 or 10 years to prepare for this collapse. So in the back about 2003, 2004, 2005, you know, when we were coming out of that last recession, you know, the Bush recession here, we said, okay, we're going to work harder. And so I have been working harder, producing more, and getting ready for tougher times to come. Well, here they are. I mean, it's here now. Now, I'm not being affected like the other 60%. You know, 60% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. I'm not living paycheck to paycheck yet. But I'm getting ready for it because it's coming. And then pretty soon, my paycheck is going to get shut off altogether. Well, I've been preparing for that. I figured that day would come when I, like everybody else, would be scrambling for, well, how am I going to pay the rent and how am I going to buy food and clothes and so on. So I started preparing for that some years back. And I've been telling my students for years, you know, hey, wake up here. Wake up. Now, some did. And many of my students report back to me. They say, well, I've got this much. I've got a 4-year supply of this. I got a 4-year supply of that. And I'm getting ready for it, and I'm still working. I'm working twice as hard, and I'm not taking any vacations. I'm not spending any money on the Carnival cruise. Well, God bless them. I hope you people make it through all right. Well, you're going to do a lot better than the guy that didn't prepare at all. Always reminds me of the story of the grasshopper and the ant. Remember that story? Grasshopper's out here fiddling and playing, you know, and the ant is over here busy stocking up for the winter, and the ant says to the grasshopper one day, hey, why don't you store up, you know, and prepare for the winter? And the grasshopper says, plenty of time for that. I'm out fiddling and having a good time. The original prodigal son. And so finally winter comes and the grasshopper's starving to death, and he asks the ant to feed him, and the ant tells him, now I've prepared for myself, but I didn't prepare for you. You know, you should have taken care of yourself when the time was there to do it. You prepare for winter in the summertime. That's when we make hay in the summertime, prepare to feed the cows in the winter. How many people do that? Well, not in Western society, and certainly not here in the United States. So for those of you, you know, that are still working, you know, you still got a job, get ready. Get the Vaseline out here because it's coming pretty shortly. All right, now number 18 says endoftheamericandream.com. 43% of Americans have less than $10,000 saved for retirement. Have you got that? Less than. 43% of Americans have less than $10,000 saved up for retirement. Well, then 43% of Americans have got just about a 2 to 3 months supply to take care of themselves. I mean, here in America, the average Joe Sixpack is making $4,000 a month, about $48,000 a year. That's about where the median average income is. Half the people of America make over that. Half the people of America make less than that. So if you're making under $48,000 a year, that's, you know, that's fine. No problem. But you're a little below the median average. If you're making $100,000 a year, that's great. Terrific. You're in the top 5%. And you're in the upper side of that $48,000 a year median average. $4,000 a month. Now, if you've got $10,000 in the bank, you've got about a 2.5 month supply to take care of yourself at the average. If you're making, you know, $3,000 a month or $2,000 a month or $1,500 a month or whatever, okay, then you've got even less. And if you got $10,000 stored in the bank and you're living at $2,000, you got a 5-month supply. That's pretty good, 5 months. 40% of Americans have a 5-month supply or less. I'm sitting here saying, you need a 4-year supply, boys and girls. 4 years. 4 years. Pay attention to Bible prophecy. And it could be as much as 7 if you were to take a look at Joseph in Egypt preparing for a 7-year famine. And I've told my students for years, I've said, you need a 4-year supply bare minimum. That's on the shelf. And then you need the capacity to produce for yourself indefinitely past that, because you don't know when this thing's going to end. The last depression went from 1929 to 1941 here in America, about 12 years. Now, if this thing goes on for 12 years, we're in at 24 months right now. We haven't reached the bottom. It took three and a half years from 29 to 33 to reach the bottom, and then we bounced along the bottom until 1941. So tuck that one away in your heart here, boys and girls, because this time it's going to be worse than the last time, and the last time it was 12 years. I'm not sure that 4 years is anywhere near enough. Not sure at all. But 4 years, bare minimum, because the book of Revelation talks about 3.5 years. The Great Tribulation, 3.5 years. 1,290 days. A time, time, and half a times. That's 3.5 years. Give yourself 3 months going in, 3 months going out. Sounds like 4 years to me, bare minimum. So I thought I'd pass that one on to you. Hey, listen, we're at the halfway point here, so let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily, worldwide, over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. It didn't cost you anything. And this may not be for you. You know, a lot of times people will say that to me. They'll say, boy, I can't take any more of this. I've had enough. Well, okay. You know, that's the way it is. Go listen to Katie Couric. She'll make you feel real good by the end of the day. All right, now the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Now, keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the global financial crisis, bad and getting worse. Richard Nymella put a paper out the other day. I say the other day, it was August the 14th, 2010, and it's entitled 40 Bizarre Statistics Dealing with the Economy. If you'd like to get a copy, go to RICNIEMELA@earthlink.net. That's RICNIEMELA@earthlink.net. And I think you can probably still get a copy of it. Now, if you can't for some reason, send me a stamped self-addressed envelope and tell me you wanted that Nymella report. I'll put this up on the shelf. If you send me a stamped self-addressed envelope according to the postal regulations, so that it's, let's see, how many pages is this thing? It's 5 pages. And I'll go over to my copy machine and I'll run off these 5 pages for you. Stick it in your envelope and then put it in the mail for you. But I think you can probably get this off of his website. He has cited about, 20, 30, 40 other websites over here where he picked up the information. And this Nymella fellow over here, he's pretty good. He's got a website, and I think you can pull this off the internet, you know, pretty much at will. If you get on to J. Richard Nymella and take a look at his website, go to RICNIEMELA@earthlink.net. Dirk does that for me every once in a while, and I see these reports come across my desk. And he's a pretty good guy. I like his information. Number 19. According to one survey, 36% of Americans say that they don't contribute anything to retirement savings. So one-third of us are not saving anything. 60% of us are living paycheck to paycheck. 40 million of us are on food stamps. Hey, what's that tell you? These are all-time records, all-time highs. Well, as a result of that, you know, we're getting poorer and poorer. The American middle class is being destroyed. You're in the process. You're watching it every day. Now, it's going to take 3 or 4 years for this to occur. It isn't going to happen overnight. But in 3 or 4 years, you're going to see the American middle class, you know, where we were living pretty comfortable, and we had a job at General Motors, and it was paying us enough to pay the mortgage, and we were living in a detached single-family resident residence out here in the suburbs someplace. We're going to find out that we're unemployed and we've been wiped out and we don't have anything left. And on top of that, we're unemployed with no prospects for the future. Now, things change over time. The New World Order will come into play. They'll give us some kind of new colored money, yellow money for green or whatever. The events that are transpiring right now, this is the process by which we are going to take away everything you've got. Then we're going to make you an offer. Get your mark of the beast, and then here's the way the New Deal is going to be working, and then here's what we're going to do with you. Then you can work for the New World Order as a credit debt serf for the rest of your life and your children's lives and so on. This is the plan. Are you gonna avoid that? I doubt it. But you might cushion it a little bit. You know, I mean, you know, instead of retiring, you know, if you're 65 right now and you're planning on retirement, I would reconsider that. Reconsider. You might want to work twice as hard for the next 2 or 3 or 4 years and see if you can't cushion the fall. I see people, old people now in Walmart, yeah, passing out baskets, you know. These are people that retired, now they have to come back and go to work. Well, what are you going to do when you're 65 or 70 years old? Yeah, you're going to greet people at the door at Walmart, which we need more greeters, you know, at Target and Best Buy and Kmart, don't we? Now, number 20. According to one recent survey, 24% of American workers say that they have postponed their planned retirement age in the past year. Okay, so 25% of us, 1 out of 4, has followed that advice. Hey, we're not going to retire. I did that 6-7 years ago. I said, hey, no, I'm not going to retire. I'm going to work twice as hard now. Number 21, the Conference Board's Consumer Confidence Index declined sharply to 52.9 in June. Most economists had expected that the figure for June would be somewhere around 62. So more and more of us are becoming more and more pessimistic, aren't we? I guess more and more of us are reading more and more underground newsletters. More and more of us are tuned in more to more and more of these statistics coming off of the internet. I guess more and more of us are listening less to Katie and listening more to Jay Richard. I'm just surmising here. Now, I'm going to give you some other newsletters here to subscribe to. If you still got $150 a year, I'm going to suggest that you get the International Forecaster, the Privateer, the Money Changer, and the Skousen Report. You know, one or two. I get those four. I get more than that here at the law school. But, you know, most of us can't afford to buy 10 of these newsletters. And I don't think you need 10. I think you just need two. Two. That's so that you can play one off the other. You know, when you get at the mouth of two witnesses or three witnesses, shall the matter be established? It'll help you get your feet on the ground, and you can say, my God, this is what Buckler is saying. Here's what Skousen's saying. Here's what Chapman is saying. Here's what Sanders is saying, or McIlvaney, or Cook, or whoever you're reading here. You know. And you compare a couple of those, and oh my God! And yeah, it is kind of depressing, and it's getting worse. But hey, listen, better to have the truth than to have rose-colored glasses. And when this thing happens, most people are going to be so shocked they'll just be in a stupor. And we haven't reached the bottom yet. We haven't even gotten into bad times yet. This is not bad times. We're still in good times. Compared to what's coming here, boys and girls, bad times are coming. That's why I'm suggesting we get ready for them. Now, number 22, retail sales in the U.S. fell in June for a second month in a row. Okay. Sales are falling. Now, here at the Christmas season, they're giving us the best possible news going forward. Black Friday was up 3.4%. Retailers are hoping for a better season this year. Excuse me. Instead of throwing your money away on Christmas presents, why don't you buy pinto beans? If I had $1,000 to spend on Christmas, I would buy 1,000 pounds of pinto beans at $1 a pound before I would spend 5 cents on a Christmas present. Now, you can spend your money, you know, on trash if you want. I don't want to tell you how to spend your Christmas money, but I think that just based upon what I'm witnessing here, what I'm watching, and the trends, the way this thing has been going downhill over the last 2 or 3 years, I think pinto beans are going to do a hell of a lot more for you over the next 3 years than a new iPad. Number 23, vacancies and lease rates in U.S. shopping centers continued to get worse during the second quarter of 2010. And that's because more and more businesses are failing. You go up here to the North Mall in Springfield, I don't think they've got 5 stores in that North Mall. When you go into the Battlefield Mall, you see vacancies. When you see the strip malls, you know, just driving down Glenstone or Campbell, just look at the number of restaurants and stores that are closed in the strip malls. I was in one strip mall the other day. 10% of the stores were closed. You know, where the gold broker is located there, you know, on Glenstone. Glenstone and Sunshine, that big shopping center there. 10%. I went and counted them. Walked around the whole mall, counted the empty holes that are in there. You know, the mall isn't dead, but, you know, with 10 holes in there. And now when you take a look, you don't find as many cars parked there. The parking lots don't have as many customers in them. Hey, that's not good. And I already reported to you Silver Dollar City and the Strip in Branson. Number 24. Consumer credit in the United States has contracted during 15 of the past 16 months. Consumer credit. People are spending less money. 15 of the past 16 months. It's contracted. It isn't remaining the same. See, now, if it was remaining the same, we would be holding our own. It's not remaining the same. It's contracting. It's not expanding, so the economy isn't growing. So that means it's contracting, which is exactly right. Over the last 16 months, 15 months out of the last 16, consumer credit in the United States is contracting. During the first quarter of 2010, the total number of loans that are at least 3 months past due in the United States increased for the 16th consecutive quarter. That's another important statistic. During the first quarter of 2010, the total number of loans that are at least 3 months past due increased for the 16th consecutive quarter. Now, a quarter is 3 months. 16 quarters is 4 years. Over the past 4 years, boys and girls, consumer credit loans that are going into default has increased every single quarter for 4 years. Hell, that goes back to 2006 then, doesn't it? So things started getting poorer and poorer about 2006, 2007. The recession began, remember, in December of 2007 and ended in June of 2009. Well, that's the official numbers. That's the official party line. Now listen to these numbers that we're reading here. It's not only worse than 2006, 7, 8, and 9. This thing's been going downhill since 2006. It's just that, you know, when boom times are here and everything's cooking, everything's going along fine, and it drops off a little bit, we don't pay attention to that. Now we're starting to pay attention because it's bad now and getting worse. Only maybe it's horrendous now and getting worse. All right, take a look at 26. Things are now so bad in California that in the region around the state capital, Sacramento, California, there is now one closed business for every six that are still open. Now, that's one closed for every six that are still open. That's one out of seven are closed. Let's see what would happen here if we divided seven into 100, divided by seven. Well, that's 14%. Now, I showed you 10% of the stores in Springfield in one shopping center that I went in and counted them up were empty. In Sacramento, California, it's 14%. Now, that's 14% of businesses. Those businesses all employ two or three people. You know, every time you close a restaurant, you're putting 20 people out of work. So for every closed restaurant or every closed clothing store, every closed this or that store, you know, there's 4, 5, 6, 8 employees that are working in there. And these stores now are closing at an accelerating rate. And over in, remember I said, in Silver Dollar City, I talked to one guy over there. He's the bucket maker, the guy that makes those wooden buckets. He said he's just hanging on by his fingernails. Just getting enough money to pay the rent and keep it cooking. Now listen to this. The state of Illinois, 27, now ranks eighth in the nation, eighth in the world, rather, in possible bondholder default. The state of California is ninth. So California, we hear a lot about, their credit's bad and getting worse. Illinois is worse than California. So for you people living in Illinois, there's a little good news for you. And by the way, about two-thirds of the pension plans in the United States are underfunded, two-thirds underfunded. That's not spelling good news for you people planning to retire on your pension now. It's bad and it's getting worse. Now, these guys aren't catching up on their payments. They're behind by two-thirds and getting further behind every month. California is so bad, they can't balance their budget. So they got a new governor coming in there, Jerry Brandt. You better be praying for Jerry that he can balance your budget. He's not going to, but, you know, pray for him anyway. The state of Illinois now ranks eighth in the world in possible bondholder defaults. you know, right after Greece, Ireland, Portugal, Spain, Italy. 29. Number 28, rather. 28. More than 25% of Americans now have a credit score below 599, which means that they're in very bad credit risk. Cut that. 25% of Americans are now a very bad credit risk. Well, that's good. 75% are average or above average, but 25% are bad. That means that 25% of us can't buy because our credit's no good. I'm one of them. I don't have any credit score. My credit's no good. I can't borrow any money. Number 29. On Friday, U.S. regulators closed down three banks in Florida, two in South Carolina, one in Michigan, bringing to 96 the total number of U.S. banks to be shut down so far in 2010. Now remember, this was out on August the 2nd. Here's a new number. I just got it from the International Forecaster. They're now up to 156, 142 last year, 146 by the 1st of November. So we've exceeded the bank failures of last year. See, these bank failures are getting worse every year. There's more and more of them, and they're getting bigger and bigger, and the FDIC is bankrupt, although they've got a line of credit for $500 billion that they haven't tapped yet. And where did they get their line of credit? Well, they got it from the Federal Reserve. And where is the Federal Reserve? Well, it's bankrupt also. And where do they get their money? They just print it and create it out of thin air. There isn't any backing for it. All right, now let's wake up and smell the coffee. 29, on Friday, U.S. regulators closed down three banks in Florida. Number 30, the FDIC's deposit insurance fund now has $20.7 billion in it, which represents a slight improvement from the end of 2009. Well, I got upgraded numbers. It's now worse than 2009. They're at minus 15. Yep, minus 15. Now, they've got a kick-in plan here. The banks are pouring money into it now. They've raised their rates so that they can pay more into the fund. Next year, they will not be able to pay the amount of money that they're going to have to pay out. They're going to have to tap into that $500 billion line of credit. 31, the U.S. federal budget deficit has topped $1 trillion with 3 months still to go in the current budget year. Now, this is August now, remember. Topped $1 trillion. Hey, we are spending $1 trillion a year more than we're taking in every year, and we're going to do that for the next 10 years. According to a U.S. Treasury Department report to Congress, number 32, the U.S. national debt will top $13.6 trillion this year. Okay, that was in August. It's already topped $14 trillion, climbing to $15 as I speak. They're expecting $19.6 trillion by 2015. Well, that's 5 years from now. 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 5 years from now. You're going to go from 14 to 19 trillion. That's another $5 trillion bucks. And number 33, the M3 money supply plunged. M3 money supply plunged 9.6% annual rate during the first quarter of 2010. That's why Bernanke needs this new program, the QE2. And that's because liquidity is dropping off. They're printing more money and passing more out, trying to get you people to borrow more money and go further in debt. And you people aren't cooperating. Number 34, according to a new poll of Americans between the ages of 44 and 75, 61% of us said that running out of money was their biggest fear, compared to money shortage fear of death to the biggie. The remaining 39% thought death was scarier. So 39% of us are afraid of dying, and 61% of us are afraid of running out of money before we die. I think that the running out of money has greater merit than dying. Number 35. One study found that as of 2007, the bottom 80% of American households held 7% of the financial assets. Got that? Get this again. The bottom 80% of us, divide America into two groups, 20% in one group and 80% in the other. in the group that has 80% of the people of America, we have 7% of the liquid financial assets, and the other 93% are held by that 20% minority. How do you like that? Number 36, the bottom 40% of all income earners in the United States now own less than 1% of the nation's wealth. 40% of the income earners, all of us guys that are down here on the bottom, you know, below the 50% mark, below the $48,000 mark, down around $40,000 a year, $35,000, all the people below $40,000 a year represent 40% of the people in the country. We have 1% of the nation's wealth. And the other 99% is owned by those people that are making $40,000 a year or more. How do you like that, boys and girls? Now, the number of people living below the nation's poverty line rose by 15%. 15% between 2000 and 2006. And by 2008, 30 million U.S. workers were earning less than $10 an hour. So we're getting poorer and poorer. This is the wipeout of the middle class. So if you're middle class, you're being wiped out. You're going to be put into poverty. That's where you're headed. Now, number 38, according to one recent study, approximately 21% of all children in the United States are living below the poverty line. That's the highest rate in 20 years. 39, for the first time in U.S. history, more than 40 million Americans are on food stamps, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture projects that number is going to 43 million by 2011. 3 million more are going to be added to the list now next year. 40 million this year, 43 million will be on the list next year. And then what about 2012, 46 million and so on? Well, look, at some point in time, the rest of us over here aren't going to be able to support all the rest of the people that aren't working and aren't producing. I mean, let's wake up and smell the coffee. Number 40, a new Rasmussen report. National Telephone Survey has found that just 23% of American voters nationwide believe the federal government today has the consent of the governed. 23% of Americans believe that the government of America is doing what we, the majority, want. The other 77%, that is, three quarters of us believe the government is operating illegally, that they're not doing what we want them to do. I'm one of those. This whole concept of spending us into bankruptcy is not my idea of a good idea. But I don't make national policy. I don't make Policy Hill in my own county. The powers that be do that. But I watch what the powers that be are doing. Remember, that's the PTB, the powers that be. And they have set the course. And you and I are riding on the great ship America, speeding through the night at top speed, headed for 5,000 square miles of icebergs, just like the Titanic. And my prediction is they're going to hit one of those icebergs at some indefinite time in the future, and the great ship America is going to sink. And when it does, I'd like to have a way off, wouldn't you? Well, I'm out of time again here, boys and girls. Let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log, schedule, and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, I'm out of time. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.